Hi guys, I'm Dan Reed and welcome back to The Career Dad Show. It's the 50th episode and what better way to spend it than to interview my father-in-law and editor of The Career Dad Show, Ian. We talk about his career of teaching abroad, and I also ask what Ian's favourite Career Dad episode was, how his family dynamic was so alien to me, and what it's been like for him during lockdown as a shielded person. I hope you enjoy. Welcome back to the Career Dad Show, episode 50. And Ian, we're sat here.
Here we are.
Here we are.
50 shows in.
50 shows in. And this is a first for a number of reasons. I think we're recording face to face, which is good. So I'm sure the audio is fine. We've got the video going as well. Also, you're my father-in-law.
That's right.
And you're also the editor. You're behind the scenes of the Career Dad Show, doing all the edits as well.
Yeah, you're right. So it's absolutely a first because here I am, you know, out from the back room and in the glare of the lights.
In the limelight.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing this.
I
thought it'd be really interesting because we obviously talk quite a lot about Career Dad behind the scenes. And I just thought it'd be interesting bringing some of those conversations up front. But I think it'd be good to actually hear a little bit about you, because obviously I know quite a lot about you, you know, a retired teacher, lived abroad, but it'd just be good to have a chat about that.
Yeah.
So your daughter, my wife, Fiona,
you
had her, you must have been mid-20s.
Yeah, I think I was 27 when Fiona was born,
Yeah, and you were a teacher, and you were doing modern foreign languages at the time, was that right? Yeah. And you started off working in the UK, but then got a gig for working for the MOD and got positioned to Cyprus.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when I started my career, I didn't actually, at the end of the university course, really know what I wanted to do. And I'd been on various, I think they still call them milk round interviews.
There's actually a website called Milk Round.
There you go. And been and had a chat with the people from Schweppes and the people from Cadbury's and the people from this and the people from that and the oil companies and so on. And I don't think either of us found much common ground. They weren't too keen on me because I was a bit of a callow youth and underprepared in most of the interviews. And, nothing that they had to offer me seemed to do much for me. But fairly soon after I finished university, a friend of mine who'd actually been to the same college as me had gone into teaching in comprehensive schools. And he said, why don't you come in for a day and see what you think? And once I got in there, he was very good in a way, because he kind of ambushed me and shoved me into a classroom with a class of kids and said, see you in half an hour. So there were these 30 kids waiting to be taught some French, and I think by the end of that half hour I thought, I like this. It's a round peg in a round hole type of thing. I enjoyed it. I felt productive. I felt as I was doing something worthwhile with them, and they hadn't all climbed out the windows by the end. And so I think at that point I kind of decided that teaching might be something I would enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And so I made some applications, and long story short, I did a PGC, which is a postgraduate cert ed certificate in education. Armed with that and my degree in modern languages, got my first job in a comprehensive school, which is in Chichester, a huge comprehensive. Chichester on the south coast in Sussex, and I was there for a number of years. And one of the people that I'd worked with in the department that I was in, the modern languages department, said to me, he was a more senior colleague, he was I guess in his mid-50s then, had spent most of his career working for Service Children's Education. It kind of no longer exists now, but it was a Ministry of Defence agency, a civilian agency of the MOD. And basically what it was is it's just quite simply a local education authority. But whereas most local education authorities are based in one geographical area, for example, West Sussex, where I was working at the time, Service Children's Education, SCE, has a kind of diaspora, so that it was looking after schools wherever British forces or civil service personnel were posted with their families. If they got right. company postings, then their families went with them. And of course, there was an expectation that the services that we expect in the UK would be replicated in yeah. whatever place they were, within reason.
Yeah.
And so therefore we had SE had schools in lots of parts of the world, the Far East, in Hong Kong and Singapore at one time, clearly in Germany, where there was quite a large MOD presence, Cyprus, Gibraltar, Belize, wow. also Canada,
wow.
A little place called Medicine Hat. Anyway, the colleague who had worked for the organization said it's very good because you basically do a similar job to the UK, but you're often in a very interesting location, and you know, for a linguist, it's a good gig because you can learn the local language and try and integrate yourself, and that's really part of what learning foreign language is about. It brings yeah. culture along with it as well.
Yeah.
And so I applied for that, and I was successful with the first application I made, and they sent us off to King Richard School in Cyprus, where I was head of modern languages there for quite a number of years, 16 years.
Yeah.
And then after that, we had a transfer to Germany for a little change of scene, and had 7 years there.
Mm-hmm.
So along with the Germany and the Cyprus experiences, and clearly I did a year abroad when I was doing my degree, yeah. which is what I was expected. So I've been in Spain as well. So I guess about 24, 25 years.
I was going to say nearly abroad. Most of your life, near enough.
Yeah, most yeah. of my adult life, certainly, yeah, yeah. you know, yeah. was doing that. So, but one never felt as though it was too far away from home, because you were working for you're working for the man. You're working for British government and the education system, and you're taxed in the UK, you're paid from the UK,
yes,
and so forth. And so it's, in a sense, quite a sort of safe adventure with a bit of a safety net there.
I was going to say, because I've been fortunate enough to see Cyprus with you, and also see Germany, and it is kind of Anglos. It's like a little bit of Britain that's been picked up and put in another space, and sometimes I say with a nice little fence around it, literally you are.
Oh, in the case of Cyprus, less so in Germany. We were living in the local community, but Cyprus being where it is strategically for the MOD, it's quite vulnerable because it's very, very close to, it's in the Middle East, really. So all the installations there are the British installations are quite heavily guarded, and like you say, there are fences around them.
Yeah.
So you live inside that little bubble. You can, of course, you know, live inside the bubble and never go outside it if that's the sort of person you are. But certainly in Cyprus, we didn't do that because not least because when we got there weren't any British quarters available inside, because they just had a large influx of personnel before we arrived. And so we were given a house. They do look after you. They, you know, give you somewhere to live.
Yeah.
And we were given a rented house in the town of Larnaca, which is a delightful town.
Yeah.
You've been.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's my kind of second home a bit. You know, Cypriot, Greek people, all Cypriots, in fact, are extremely hospitable. You know, we really quickly got to know our neighbours, and, you know, that was a good way in for me to learn some Greek, because our neighbours didn't speak a great deal of English, but that didn't get in between us, because with a bit of goodwill and the desire to, you know, get yourself integrated into the community, that you can do it. And Fiona was out playing with a little girl from across the street, Eleni, and so on. In due course, that came to an end because they did find us a quarter inside the wire. And because the quarters inside the wire are a bit cheaper than renting houses for personnel, that's what they did. But nonetheless, it was a very nice experience. And then, like I said, it's a good experience for a linguist, because you're kind of living the job you've a little bit been trained to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say your background was French and Spanish, but you've picked up a number of languages along the way.
Yeah.
German and Cypriot, which is, fantastic.
Well, at the time, you know, when I was, when I started teaching, we're armed with French and Spanish. Spanish was not at all popular as a teaching language in British comprehensive schools.
All right.
German was what everybody wanted at that time.
Oh, wow.
I think it was just, you know, we were during the Thatcher era, and it was the idea of reaching out and making business
right
the top of the agenda.
It is the business language, isn't it, German?
German and French, really, in Europe. And with Germany being the economic powerhouse, all the kids had to learn German. That was the thing then. And, of course, as that thing somewhat faded, and the idea of leisure time began to take a little bit more of a grip, you know, perhaps through the Blair years and so on, Spanish came to the fore. So, you know, it was a strange thing, because when I started teaching, I thought, well, if I'm going to do anything with this and have any ability to move around, you do need a bit of German. So I thought, crumbs, I've got to learn some German.
Yeah,
that's what I did. I learned some German, took O level. I think it was O level I took, and then A level.
Mm.
And then I was able, in a position really, to apply for jobs where German teaching was required.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I got to King Richard School, my employers were very good and sent me to Dusseldorf University to do a short course and really get the German up to some kind of approaching degree level, I suppose. So that armed me with the three big languages. And then as time went on, Spanish came more to the fore. So,
And then,
of course, in Cyprus, I managed to learn some Greek, which was a tricky language to learn because the alphabet's Cyrillic, and so you have to learn to write it, write in Cyrillic. But nonetheless, you know, I learned it kind of on the hoof there, really, particularly with my neighbours, who were very, very good. I think I did a GCSE in that as well.
Yeah.
So then at least I was able to offer Greek to kids in our school who wanted to learn Greek. And we did have quite a number of locally entered youngsters who had a Cypriot Greek background, and that gave them the in so that they could make the most of that and get themselves a GCSE or an A level on the back of that. So, so I'm with languages, a bit of a jack of all trades. I don't speak any of them absolutely perfectly. I don't think, you know, anyone who isn't a real bilingual with a parent who's a national of the language that you're dealing with ever achieves that complete fluency. It's very elusive.
Yeah.
You know, I have always loved languages, and so, you know, I try very hard to keep up to date with it. And I've always got a language app on my phone. You know, if I see a word on the news that I don't know in German or French or something, I'll look it up. You know, it's just a constant plate spinning and, you know, keeping it going, really. And I think it's a lifelong passion, a lifelong hobby. And, you know,
but it can serve you for life as well.
So oh, for sure. I made a good living out of, out of teaching.
Yeah,
you know, foreign languages to O level and GCSE and A level.
Yeah, and just taking it back to Cyprus. Mm. So when you moved to Cyprus, Fiona was born, or so she was already around.
She was three or four. Four, I think.
Four.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How was that in terms of, because you'd done a year abroad studying, so but then you were picking up life as you knew it, and yes, that you had the wraparound.
Yeah,
but how? Did it cross your mind as to what that would be like for her, or was it just this was something that everyone was bought into doing and you just went? I don't know how that played in with, you know, her grandparents and all of that as well.
I mean, there are those issues, aren't there, when you move your location, whether it's 300 miles away in the UK or you actually go onto the continent across to Cyprus. And, you know, we made it very clear to family and grandparents that, you know, we were going to sort of keep all the channels open and take all our holidays in the UK.
Right.
And, you know, in due course, we retained a house in the UK. And so it wasn't one of those awful kind of wrenches where you know, the family disappeared to Australia and never seen again kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And we were, and as I say, it was a bit almost like working on contract abroad, really, but keeping those links. And you know, we had plenty of family visits, and as I say, we took our holidays really in the UK, because we lived in, I guess, what we, it's a holiday resort, isn't, you know, tourism is big in Cyprus, and we lived, I guess, 300 yards from the Mediterranean, and could just walk down and swim whenever and stuff. And so beach holidays ceased to be a priority what you want to do in the summer is to get on the plane and you know, come back to Northampton.
Yeah.
And experience some cool weather and, you know, perhaps a little bit more developed shopping and so on. Yeah, so it wasn't a terribly traumatic thing. But, of course, when you... You know, you take your kid to a new place, you hope everything will be all right. But it fitted well with Fiona because she was just about to start school.
Yeah.
What they call the rising five. She was about to go into reception. And so that was the first and only primary school that she went to.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, in due course, she came and was a student in the school where I was teaching. That was, again, her secondary school up to the end of year 11.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't a terrible sort of breakup of what we'd already got. It was just sort of quite a nice opportunity and a safe one.
Yes.
That preserved all our links with the UK and enabled us to you know, go and try something a little bit different.
Yeah. Is that why she doesn't like beach holidays? She's just not bothered about a beach holiday.
She would be, because we spent a huge amount of time you know, floating around in the sea and, you know, sitting on the beach having kebabs and chips and but, you know, that mean the glow of that doesn't last forever. We've been out of Cyprus for, I guess about 14 years.
And one thing that we've talked about, I guess, offline is around paternity leave. Because, you know, with Theo, I had a week's paternity leave paid and then I took a week's holiday.
Yeah.
With Xanthi, I had 2 weeks paternity leave. And then a week's paid holiday.
Yeah.
That's a bit of an alien concept for when you had kids, right?
Yeah. Luxury. You're right. I mean, when Fiona was born, I think it was the statutory allowance was something like 2 days.
Mm.
So I had 2 days and then rolled back into work on the third day to a chorus of, "Where have you been, you lazy so-and-so?"
Yeah.
And... yeah, but that was how it was, and you didn't know any different, and you just carried on.
Yeah.
But certainly things have changed so much, you know, and, you know, I know a lot of your contributors have talked about this, and part of the raison d'etre of Career Daddies is to explore and promulgate, really, the information about shared parental leave and integrating, you know, work with being a parent and so on. It's been absolutely great listening to a lot of your contributors on that one, because, you know, the world has moved on so much in those, whatever, 35 years.
Yeah.
And in the right direction, I absolutely think. You know, your library of interviews is a real showpiece of how much has been done, and also it kind of points out things, but you know this better than I do, how much there is still to do in that respect, you know.
Yeah.
Not so much in entitlement to things like shared parental leave, but in attitude.
Yes.
And you know, I'm a big supporter of what you do with that.
No, really, thank you,
because it's so important.
You mentioned that the backlog, and this might be a bit of an unfair question, but who's really stood out? Who have you really enjoyed editing and listening back to?
Well, look, if all 49 of them are listening, they're going to get annoyed if I don't say their name. But, you know, they've all had fantastic stories to tell. That's what I love about editing for you. You know, the story, you know, it's not something where you put the headphones on and think, oh, gosh, how long will this take? You think, oh, this is a great story. And then I'm, you know, loath to take bits out to get the thing to the right length. So, but yeah, there's been some wonderful contributors. Just a couple at random, I think. Chris, who you had on recently, is a little bit more senior and been through much bigger sort of swathe of his career than some of your younger contributors. And his amazing pathway of whatever it was, 7 or 8 different, not jobs really, but different careers entirely, you know, it shows a man of great gifts and someone who knows how to seize an opportunity when it's there, you know. I thought he was great, a fantastic singing voice still. And then I also enjoy some of the human interest stories that you've managed to unearth. And some of your contributors have been incredibly frank. There was the contributor you had on recently who little baby girl who's
Mike.
Was very, very premature, and it was really inspirational story of how Mike and his partner and their little girl came through that and managed to keep everything together and keep life on track. Mm. And that really was a real, to me, that was a real career dad story, you know. And I think possibly one of the biggest standouts is one of the early ones, Michael Ray, the Australian guest that you had. And, you know, Michael, I thought, was really inspirational with the, if listeners don't really know what I'm referring to, he brought up his and is bringing up his daughter on his own and facing some of those challenges where the world at large expects a mum to turn up with a little girl for ballet, or a mum to turn up with a little girl to do cookery classes or to go to a parents' evening or whatever. And you know, I thought Michael was a great sense of humour. That little girl is obviously being loved and looked after to the nth degree. And I think they make he says as well, they make a great team together. So I think you got some really good role models on here, you know. And I also think it tells, the whole thing has a theme running through it of these career dad interviews. And I would urge people to have a listen back to some of them, of how people work very, very hard to keep their families together and to give their kids the best start in life, and at the same time to look after themselves and take opportunities as and when they come. And I think that's been really good to hear how people just jumped on the bus at the right time and they're doing really good, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's something that I think is the thing I probably struggle the most with, is particularly with lockdown, is having everyone's here, for the podcast, in the house, everyone's in the house. But I'm in this little room, and sometimes you feel like I was saying to Fiona last night, I feel like I'm spending less time with Theo now than when I was working in London, which is nuts. Yeah. But I think part of it is because Xanthi's here as well, and she, as a one-year-old, needs either mine or Fiona's attention.
Yeah.
And so Fiona and I try and share that as much as possible, which means that Theo is left to his own devices to an extent. And I think partly we're quite lucky in that suits him. He's happy to get a box of Lego and literally spend hours following instructions, putting things together. So, but I think it might be more my bringing up some of my issues from my childhood and putting them onto that situation. But yeah, I really like that you've called out the, you know, that we just, everyone's just trying to do the best that they can do and just piece it all together, aren't they?
Yeah.
And you moved from Cyprus to Germany to have that experience. But before that, Fiona, when she was 16, she came back to the UK to do sixth form. How was that?
Yeah, it was an interesting time. We did have a sixth form at the school, at King Richard School down there. But not all the youngsters who were going to do sixth form went into it for a simple reason, really. It was such a small sixth form, because it was a really small school, you know, a couple of hundred kids tops. And, you know, sixth forms need to be a little bit bigger in order to have the curriculum funding to offer all the courses. And I think she felt, and we certainly felt, that she would do better going to our partner school. We had a partner school,
right,
which we could send our students to in Hampshire, Peter Simmons Sixth Form College. And they had an agreement with the government on that one. And so she went off to Peter Simmons. But it's tough. I mean, we're not a family that, we're a comprehensive school family. You know, we're not a family that has any history of sending kids away for private education or boarding school or anything, you know. And that was the first time that you know, she'd been away for a long time. And it was a little bit of a wrench at the start, I guess, you know. But you know, by that time the Nokia 3210 was in existence, and you know, so we could text her and keep an eye on things, you know. We got her a little laptop with a little slightly primitive desktop camera on it, and you know, you could make sure she was still around, you know. But it was absolutely fine. And I think, you know, it did her a lot of good because she went over there with some friends from Cyprus and some of the friends from who were in that community from Germany as well. And yeah, they actually had rather a good time, as I understand it.
Yeah, it seems so, doesn't it?
Getting requests for her to make vodka jelly or something, but that was good in the end, you know. And it's the kids who stayed in Cyprus for sixth form certainly did well in terms of having lots of attention from their teachers and so on. But I think, you know, when you're a very young family, Cyprus is a nice place to bring up little kids because it's safe. Mm. When you've got teenagers, you know, certainly when they get to A-level age, you begin to see that there are some limitations there, and that they need to reconnect with the bigger picture, really.
And then what was it like also coming back to the UK? Because that, you know, you've come back for holidays and, you know, that's where we, you know, when Fiona and I are at university, that's mainly where we'd see you.
Yeah.
But then when you came back to the UK properly, was there, I don't know, and I don't want to project my own, but I don't know, I don't know if I'd be thinking, oh. I've lived in these wonderful places and now I'm kind of coming back and I'm in Northampton. But I guess, you know, obviously we're here, which is a huge draw.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, the thing was that I was one of those annoying, lucky people who managed to get retirement at a sort of relatively early age because the school I worked in Germany, Prince Rupert School, fabulous school, I didn't know that when I joined it, but a number of years later, it was decided that school should close.
Right.
It was an absolutely outstanding school. We all loved working there. And we you've been to Germany yourself, where we were. It's a beautiful area of Germany in Lower Saxony. And but the positive side of that was that they said to long-serving members of staff, look, if you're 55 or over, you can take your pension and, you know, we'll look after you and give you a little bit of an extra on that to, basically to help you on your way because your school's closing. And, I was quite happy to take that.
Yeah.
I would have carried on for another 2-3 years, perhaps 4 or 5 even, you know,
but
part of it was that they might have needed to send me back down to Cyprus, which, you know, and I didn't really want to go back down there because of having you guys over here and an aging mum-in-law who, you know, needs a bit of TLC. And so, you know, family arrangements begin to encroach a little bit. And, you know, when you're in that sort of generation where your parents are quite elderly and you want to be keeping an eye on them, so it was good. I wasn't in any way sad about it, other than you know, as you say, having enjoyed some lovely locations and also some fantastic students and colleagues. You know, I loved everyday teaching. And and then we got back, and then of course, as you know, we sort of stepped into a new sort of occupation, which we absolutely love, which is you know, doing childcare for you guys, and looking after Theo, who's fantastically best mate. And
I'm glad that's where we ended up, because I wanted to talk on that, because I don't feel like it was planned, but you happened to retire and come back to the UK pretty much as Fiona fell pregnant.
That's right.
And
we were back in July of 2014 and Theo popped out in August.
Yes.
Okay. 3 weeks later. So,
that was impeccable timing.
It wasn't bad timing, was it?
Yeah. And, you know, I always attribute the work that I'm able to do and the career that I'm able to forge and the flexibility that I have with that to be able to do some of the school runs and do, I wouldn't be able to do that without the supporting cast around and the collective. And, you know, Fiona obviously plays a huge role in that, but so do you and Wendy. And I think that how I sometimes feel that we're putting so much on you, because I am, again, maybe I'm projecting, but I fast forward to my own retirement. I'm on that golf course every single day. That's what, and so I just don't know, is because it's not necessarily what you signed up for in retirement, but I do think it is enjoyable to some level. But just how do you? I just really feel for the parents that don't have that option, especially with, you know, lockdown and schools. Yeah. And we can talk a little bit about that maybe. Yeah. But I just, how was it when you came back and you, you know, Fiona's pregnant and, you know, obviously she was on maternity leave for a while. But how did that feel as entering into that new world of grandparent?
Yeah. Oh, it was great. I absolutely no problems at all with it. And, you know, worked all my life with young people and you know, enjoyed being around, enjoy the buzz, you know, and the, or something happening the whole time, you know. And then there you've got a littly to look after, and it's a bit like a job, except no one's looking over your shoulder and you can do what you want. And you know, Theo and I became best buddies instantly, and you know, trot off to Waitrose and get our breakfast in the morning and get our little routine going and decide what we're going to play with and do this, do that. And you know, as you say, when she's very good with them as well, you know. And so, but we both absolutely, she's a teacher, as a primary school teacher too, so both absolutely loved it, you know. And you know, it would be very easy to slip into retirement where you I've said this to you lots of times, where you sit on the couch and just seize up, because you know, I guess when you get into your late 50s, 60s, whatever, You need to be up and about. It does you a favour to be up and about, playing with kids and doing stuff and taking them for walks and all the rest of it, and keeping the routine going, you know, for a full day, because you know, it certainly keeps everything moving. And and we still get time to go out and play some golf, don't we? You know,
so not as much as we should. I know, but that is great, because I often get a lot of, like, work friends. People say, how do you get out to play golf as much as you do? And I'm like, well, we go out with you, and it's we often we're normally out once a week.
At least, that's right.
Especially with the summer, if we can finish early on a Friday and get out, then you've got to do, although it's raining tomorrow. We'll have to see what happens with that. We're coming towards the end of September. The schools are going back. We at the moment have decided that's not for Theo. We're most likely going to be pulling him out of school and homeschooling him with obviously yours and Wendy's help. But how, and also, so Fiona starts back work on Monday, so her maternity leave ends, so there's going to be Theo and Xanthi. How do you feel about that?
Oh, that'll be fun. That'll be fun. We're mob-handed, there's two of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said a few moments ago, Theo's a really good lad. If you get him engrossed in something, he can probably do that on his own for half an hour. And we'll split the tasks up. And, you know, I quite like to go walking with the pram. So
yes,
that'll probably be me and Xanthi. We'll go and have a look around, see what's going on.
Yeah.
And Theo can maybe stay home with his nanny and, you know, build something incredible out of Lego.
We'll get it
sorted and it'll be no problem.
Absolutely. And just thinking around lockdown in general, how I've kind of I've seen it as a real, there are some real positives. There's some people saying, you know, this is let's just forget 2020, let's write it off. And I don't quite think that, because there are some positives. I've heard people now describe it as the great pause, as in, you know, there's a pause button that's been pressed, but actually that's time to stop and reflect. And that's something that I've done a little bit as well. I'm just wondering, how has it been for you as well? You've been shielded as well. How have you found the whole experience?
Surprisingly easy, really. That's
good.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's because I'm in that top, probably, I don't know, 2-5% of people who've got all the lucky cards dealt to them.
Yeah.
You know, retired with an income, roof over my head, nice house, nice garden.
Yeah.
No job to worry about, no dependents to worry about. You know, Tesco on the doorstep to deliver all the snacks. It can't get much easier, really, Dan, you know. And so we you know, we spent time doing a bit of walking and practicing the piano and doing some music, which I've been planning to do for a while and not quite got around to, but eventually did. And but you know, I'm there's also a little hint of guilt pushing around in the back of my mind because you know, well, yeah, because there's so many people who've been, you know, been put on their back by this thing, you know, whether it be, you know, single parents in difficult circumstances with, you know, with children who they're with 24/7, perhaps, you know, not able to go out in the garden, worrying about their income, maybe on furlough, maybe not, maybe lost their jobs, and there's huge amounts of stress and really unhappiness has been caused by this thing, and so, you know, from a selfish point of view, it's been great, but you know, I don't want to underestimate the impact that it's had on all kinds of people that we sometimes, you know, lose sight of.
Yeah, and I agree. I think as well, something that I try and think of is having that empathy is great, but it's not your fault. So, you know, it's there are people who are much worse off.
Yeah.
And whatever we can do, either you and I, we can do, but also we as a society is great. And, you know, anyone who's been on furlough or lost their jobs, if I have to pay more taxes to help, that's fine. Yeah. I know that, again, comes from a privileged position of having the money to be able to do that. But at the same time, one thing that I'm quite big on is, you know, I was speaking to a colleague at work who had a six-figure salary, as did her husband, who both lost their jobs, and you know, they've both now found employment again. But you know, we were saying no one's gonna cry for, you know, the six-figure family, but they also live that lifestyle and have that flat in London and do and so it doesn't discriminate. It's impacted everyone, and everyone has lost something, even if it is, you know, even if it's the ability to, you know, I really enjoy the commute because that's my downtime to read or whatever it is. And so I think it's okay to feel like something might have been lost, but also have that wider empathetic, you know, at least, you know, like you say, you've got a roof over your head. You're not going to worry about things, but it is, it'll be good when this is all over.
Yeah, and everyone's got a story about it. And I mean, that is another thing that's come through the Career Dad interviews in the last podcast, rather, in the last number of months, that everyone has a lockdown story. And, you know, it's that thing about everyone's life is just as complicated as yours and in different ways. And it's a really complicated mosaic. And so, you know,
there is a word for that. I've heard it once a few years ago, and I need to, but I don't know how you Google to find there is a word that describes the realization that everyone else has a life as complex as yours.
Yeah.
And I cannot find
we'll try and track it down. Then I'll need to translate it into other languages.
Exactly.
Just so it keeps it straight in here.
Exactly. Yeah. And the last question that I had for you is just around, there's obviously some generational differences in things. What advice would you have for someone who is, you know, about to be a parent? Or, you know, what have you... Because I guess to... I know I've just asked you a question, but to preface this, I used to find it fascinating when I first met you and Fiona and I were first dating, and your family dynamic is so different to whatever I was used to. And I loved it and was also a bit intimidated by it because I was so, you know, like I remember growing up and there was like, you know, this little money jar. And if you took like a pound out, you'd have to write a piece of paper. I took a pound out and, you know, and it was, and we didn't have a lot growing up, but I get that.
Yeah.
But I remember when my car packed in and I was, I don't know, 20, 21 or whatever it was. And you just bought us a new, you know, not a new car, but you were like, oh, well, you need a car, bought your car. And I'm like, I don't know how I kind of feel about this. And kind of over the years learnt that you really just are a collective. It's almost like the Borg. It's
we assimilated you, and now you embrace it.
I know, but I love it. I do love it, and I do. You know, like we were meant to go to Cyprus this year. Yeah. I'd got a relatively good bonus, which would cover, you know, the trip and all of that. Yeah. And I just wouldn't think twice about, we'll do that, because I think I wouldn't be in the position to be able to do that if you guys wouldn't have helped us out so much when we needed that bit of a helping out. And I do see it as this kind of circular collective. Yeah. But I just wonder how, what is there anything different that you recommend or give advice to new parents today? Or
crumbs. I've listened to a lot of the advice that your contributors have given over the months, and they're absolutely right in pretty much everything they say. But I guess my advice would be to just enjoy the time. If you've got littlies, whether you're a parent or a grandparent, just enjoy being with them and have fun with them. And don't discount the speed with which time passes, you know. And, if you're sitting there reading a newspaper and your little friend wants to, make a space station out of Lego, put the newspaper down, because the words won't fall off it.
Yeah.
The letters won't all slide off while you're making the but you might not get too many chances to make space station. So you spend your time with them and enjoy it. You're only going to come that way once.
Yeah.
And because they're absolutely magical. It's great being with the littlies and, seeing them grow and develop and playing a role there. And, you know, parents have got this unique job and, just enjoy it. Well, don't wish your life away thinking, oh, gosh, you know, when they're teenagers, they'll probably be in the garage, you know, playing their instruments or, you know, sitting in the bus shelter and we'll get some peace. Enjoy what's in front of you right now and just make the most of it and be with them and hang out with them and have fun with them.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. And I think that I need to take that from time to time as well.
And we all
look, thank you so much for being the 50th episode.
It's a privilege.
And I won't make you edit this one.
All right.
That's good.
All right, mate. Thanks
thank
very much.
Thank you. Cheers.
That's all we've got time for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Career Dad Show. If you did, have you got 10 seconds to rate the podcast? Maybe you've got 20 and can write a review. I appreciate all of you guys for listening. See you next week. Stay cool, be kind.